You can have all the Explorations Early Learning Upstairs Studio podcast with our new app. Just search your app store, Apple, Android, Kindle. We don't care what you use. Search the app store for Explorations Early Learning. Download the app. Give it a try. Welcome to another episode of the Child Care Bar and Grill podcast. I'm Jeff Johnson coming to you live from upstairs studio. In studio with me, I've got Lisa Murphy.
Good morning.
Tiffany, our engineering person.
Hello.
Also known as E.T., Engineer Tiffany. And on the phone with us, we're happy to have back Tamar Jacobson, early learning rock star, because her book, Don't Get So Upset, it made me a better not only at the job of early learning when we were running our family child care program, but I think it made me a little bit better husband and a little bit better grandpa, because there's a lot of good yummy nuggets of thoughtfulness. Yummy nuggets of thoughtfulness in the book. And Tamar was with us a bunch of episodes ago, and we decided we would have her back because she's such a delight to talk to. How you doing, Tamar?
Hi. I'm fine, thanks. It's nice to hear you again, and so nice to hear that I'm delightful.
You are delightful. Well, how could you've got to know you're delightful. I mean, how could you not know? So, Tamar, what have you been working on?
You haven't read my book, because if you would have read my book, you'll see that I had such a tough childhood that I really don't know that I'm delightful, and
well,
I have to work very hard on that.
Yeah, but how? But by now, with so many people telling you, I mean, I can't be the only one telling you. It's great. So, what have you been working on? What have you been thinking about lately? We wanted to connect with you and just see what's going on in your head as far as early learning and parenting and working with children. So, what do you want to talk about?
Yeah. Actually, what I do want to talk about is about children's need for attention. From a number of different angles, I'm writing a piece on that. I don't know if it will be part of something or whether it will be a standalone something. My concern is that children need attention desperately for all kinds of reasons, which we can go into, and that predominantly adults think that it's not a good thing that they need attention, that they've got to stop it. And they've got to get on with it without our attention. And I get that a lot from working with teachers of children and also, you know, observing parents in action sometimes, or just watching children when they need it. And then, of course, there's my life story and my issues with attention getting. So that's kind of what I'm looking at.
And so are we still living in that world of seen and not heard is the model a lot of adults are working on when it comes to children?
That's such a good question, because I think, yes, I do. I do a lot of supervising of student teachers out in the field, preschool, actually toddler land, right through third grade. And actually, the older children get, the worse it becomes, the silence in the classroom that's demanded of children. It's heartbreaking for me to see.
Well,
just heartbreaking.
It's horrible. We've been working through. We've been looking on Pinterest and on the interwebs for classroom rules. You know how classrooms, they'll take a piece of poster board and they'll post the classroom rules. And we've been breaking those down and discussing them. And one we see in a lot of them is quiet mouths. And this is for like 2-year-old rooms on up. And
I don't even know how to have a quiet mouth.
Whoa.
I know that, Lisa. I know that.
So how could I possibly expect somebody else to be quiet?
And so where does this come from? How did we get to this place where this is a problem?
You know, I don't think it's new. I think it's always been there. I think that there are some enlightened people out there who understand how children develop and what they need, you know, like us, for example, and also a lot of my colleagues and so forth. And of course, there are wonderful new up-and-coming teachers that I teach who get it. But predominantly, I think the society likes it. And, you know, I'm going to bring in something here which I probably shouldn't, but maybe you can edit it out.
Oh, no. That's the kind of stuff we like to hear.
I think that's why Donald Trump is so popular, because he's able to demand attention. And everybody wants attention, and they look at him and think, why can't we be like him? And they love it that he gets all this attention. They don't care what he'll do to get it.
Well, and I would agree with that. And I would also argue on the other side of the spectrum, I think Bernie Sanders kind of has the same effect on people, because he is saying things differently and louder than his counterpart in the Democratic Party, Hillary, is. And so I think people are kind of drawn to that as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think we've all been so repressed in terms of us needing attention, because I think if we look at why children actually need attention, we'll see that it's part of their development and it's part of how we become who we are. And if we've had that repressed, it becomes very problematic later on down the road. I mean, speaking out or having independent thought, these are complicated and complex issues for us. It's not simple to be able to think critically for yourself when you've had it so repressed inside you. I mean, I see kindergartners who are sitting quietly obeying absolute rubbish rules and not even acting out anymore, you know, and it really worries me in terms of critical thinking.
Well, yeah, if they've lost their independence, their drive for self-actualization and personal choice at the age of 5 or 6 in kindergarten, where does that lead us when these people grow up and become our civic leaders and parents and community leaders in 20 or 30 years? It is a scary thing.
Compliance being instilled at such a young age.
Yes. And if I want to bring it back to the topic of attention getting or giving, because that's what I'm feeling about. And of course, you know, I think that many of us, not all, but many of us work on things that have been challenging for ourselves when we were growing up. And for me, getting attention as a child was very difficult, because I was in a situation in my family where there was just sort of no time or place for it. And so I know that I'm following this path because it comes from me too, which is, you know, as you know from my book, this is what I want for teachers, is to reflect on how we get here, you know, what we feel and so forth. And so I think that the problem with getting attention for children, they've given up on it. And there's probably they go through life later on as adults with a kind of nagging longing that they can't really ever talk about to anybody or put a name on. And I think it affects us, you know, I just think it does. So I'm trying to think how to talk about it with teachers, because it seems to be such a problematic topic. It comes out of my work in the Don't Get So Upset book, which is about helping children manage their feelings, right? About understanding our own. And I'm still asked to, it's such a timeless subject. I'm asked to do workshops everywhere on this topic over and over again. But what comes out of it very often, in fact, usually, is, but what do you do with a child who needs attention? Right?
give them attention?
I've said that since the
logical.
Since the first time you said that, Tamar, it's been totally in the forefront of my brain. And they're like, well, what, he just needs attention. He's just looking for attention. And I have found myself becoming more confident in just looking at that person and saying, so what is stopping you from giving it to her or to him?
Yeah.
And there's this jump, because I think it has become common that we think that the child who's vying for attention is somehow trying to be a pain in our side. And it's, I think, often misinterpreted. And that's one of the things I love about listening to your work, is helping folks get through that.
Oh, thank you, Lisa, for understanding that and liking it. I struggle with many people when I do bring that up, or when I've, you know, when I follow up with, well, let's see how we could give them attention if that's what they need. because it is seen so negatively. I have started sort of interviewing, you know, students and teachers and people just generally, like even my neighbors and so forth, just sort of asking them, you know, how do you see it when children need attention? And it's always negative, you know. It's, we can't reinforce it, and it's bad for them. And I don't know what they think will happen to them. You know, maybe they'll be spoiled and become like Donald Trump. I mean, I don't know what they think. I mean, I think probably Donald Trump didn't get enough attention, probably.
he's obviously making up for it. So I have a hard time wrapping my head around that whole idea. Just for an example, the last couple of days at my house, Lisa's been here, Tiffany's been here, our buddy Kristen, who's been here, who works on another podcast with us, and they've been hanging out, and we got somebody else coming to visit today, and so all these adults are coming and going this last three or four days, and my 3 and 11, 12 year old granddaughter is here, and she is a sponge soaking up attention from all of her friends. And I got to tell you, every once in a while, we're trying to work on something and grandbaby Rowan needs some attention, but Lisa or Tiffany or whoever takes time and gives her that. And that seems so normal to me. And then I look at the reality, in a year or two, she's going to go off to kindergarten, and it's going to be quiet mouths, hands to yourself, no talking.
And in some preschools too.
Yeah.
Yes, it is. And, you know, walking in lines in silence, you're not even allowed to sort of talk to your friend when you're walking down the corridor.
Yeah, I visited a program, an elementary school in my community, where the first week of school they were expected to walk not only in line but with their hands behind their back.
Oh God.
They didn't want them touching the walls or touching the people in front of them. I mean, you might as well just put the handcuffs on them.
I know. I mean, it makes me laugh, but it's actually very heartbreaking.
Yeah, you have to laugh.
What children are going through.
You have to laugh to keep your heart from breaking.
I want to say something about grandbaby Bug when she's here. One of the things that I've noticed consistently during my visits here for recording is that, because she does get filled up when she asks for it, or we can see that she needs it, the times that you actually kind of have to be like, hey, you know, I can't right now, like, there isn't that pushback and drama. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, because she knows that she does get it, there isn't this, like, you know, it doesn't turn into a thing.
Yeah.
Because the not giving of the attention has become the exception, not the rule. And, I'm so stuck on what you said, Tamar, about how the children are, they're not even pushing back anymore.
No. Well, the one classroom that I saw just very recently, they didn't. And there were a couple of kids there that I saw who might normally do that. You know, they're smart. They don't want to be talking anymore. They've been talking now every single day about how many days they've been in school, and it's so boring for them. You know, I mean, it's what we do with prisoners. They sort of count the days off on the wall. You know, they make a big chart and they count the days off, and children are counting days endlessly in these circle times. And some of these children are smart and have thoughts of their own, and they're just sort of sitting there like blobs, you know, completely apathetic. It's I want them to rise up, you know, and rebel a little bit.
need a preschool rebellion. That'd be a great movie.
And just say, you know, I don't care how many days I'm in this damn school. So, can't we count something else?
Right.
So where do we go from here? Why is there this need for attention? If we need to touch, yes. if we can touch on that, and then where do we go? How do we make it better?
Right. Well, first, what I want to write about, and also I'm starting to talk about. Now, I'm making more of an issue of it when I'm going out to do my presentation. I make it a piece of it, a bigger piece. Just very briefly, you know, all the developmental needs of children and why they actually need attention and what it does for them in terms of understanding who they are and figuring out all that piece and feeling loved and secure and attachment and all that stuff. And then I'd like to sort of look at why what people feel about getting attention for themselves and how we did it, how it was for us when we were children. Because I always like to bring us back to that, because I think then we can connect to what we're doing when we know, you know, what pushes our buttons as well. And so try and have a conversation, either in written or talking with people, about what we did for attention and how we were treated. And so then we can sort of pull it apart and say, okay, well, I don't need to do that anymore. I can see the benefits of it for children because I'm a professional, but I can also see how it affects me when I want to give attention and I can't. And also take into account that it's very difficult to run a classroom when it has to be so structured if children need to think for themselves. So that's a big issue, actually. That's a big part of it, you know, the curriculum. That curriculum drives that kind of sterile obedience, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Now, is with the structured environments in the classroom, is part of that the reason so many adults, whether you're in preschool or further along in the educational pipeline, is one of the reasons that we have so much structure is that the adults working in those classrooms have a need for attention, and when we have these very rigid curriculums, all eyes are on me as the teacher. And then those people that get the attention they need. Because last time we were together, we talked about how this profession attracts broken people, and so is that right. Have we created a beast that is attacking itself with this situation?
Oh, it's you bring up that the profession attracts broken people again, and actually, Lisa, I think you touch on it a little bit in your book.
Yes. I touch on it a lot.
I was so proud of you.
Thank you.
Huh?
Well, I've been struggling with wanting to explore that in doctoral level work, but I honestly don't know if I have the emotional stamina to pursue, you know, multiple years of investigating this. But it's a very huge attraction to me to think about that, because I think it influences and gets in the way of how we are interacting in the classroom.
Yes, I think you're right. It's a study I've wanted to do for a long time. I don't think it's something that would take that long, by the way. I think it's maybe going out and doing interviews with people or having them do surveys along with the interviews and then looking at the literature and putting it together. But that's another semester, as Lillian Katz would say.
That's a whole different plate of potatoes.
That's a whole other issue. But it is true that maybe the teachers need the attention as well. I don't know if it's that could be part of it, or it's just that they don't know any other way to do curriculum.
Well, yeah.
I mean, I'm at a school whose principal is really wanting, where I'm working with the teachers a bit, she's really wanting them to take on some of the philosophy of Reggio Emilia, and some of her teachers are getting it and working with it. And she has a new teacher who really wants to get into it. She's very, very full of goodwill. But it's so difficult for her to understand that children can explore on their own and think for themselves, that she just gets in their way all the time. And, you know, I've been asked to work with her, and I'm going to try. And I think I've got a chance because she has goodwill, but it's so deep because most of us have been educated that way. And we don't know what it looks like a different way. And it's very difficult. Because I think that type of curriculum, and like you say, I think it's like a cycle, a circle sort of thing. It attracts that kind of control over children. And we don't have time for them to need us.
Yeah,
yeah.
We don't
yeah.
have time for them to think for themselves. By golly,
we have to get to snack.
have to get snack,
and there's a standardized test after nap time this afternoon.
That's right.
Well, at the kindergarten level, it's really chronic. They've got 20-minute segments, sometimes 15-minute segments to do stuff. So they haven't got any time to let children ponder.
Well,
there is just no time.
All the research says that when we break a child's day up into 20-minute segments and add as many transition times as possible is optimal for child development, right? How can we?
Which books have you been reading?
Well, exactly. Yes. How can we be such idiots when it comes to this stuff? The research. I mean, we do so many things that the research says the exact opposite is the best choice, and we keep doing dumb stuff, Tamar. What? Grr.
I know. You know, Bruce Perry says that we're a nation that is child illiterate because we know more about child development than we've ever known, and yet we do things and put policies in place that are just totally absurd, even compared to other countries, other European countries. Finland, for example. I saw a movie by Michael Moore recently called Where to Invade Next, where he goes to different countries to see how they do things and wants to adopt their policies for America. And he goes to Finland, and the education system there is something to behold. The teachers will be interviewed, and they said, well, children need to have joy in their lives. I mean, they're saying things that, you know, I had goosebumps thinking, gosh, I wish I could hear a teacher here say something like that, you know?
Is this an American problem?
I think it is. And the problem with American having this problem is that the world looks to America because they think it knows everything, you see.
Well, and I think I think it's a Canadian problem, and I think it's an Australian problem too. I mean, and for exactly that reason, that they look at us and model what we're doing. And they may not be as far down that path as we are, but from the presentations and conversations I've had doing presentations in those areas, I think if they're not as far along as we are, but they're headed that way is the way it, and trying to fight against it. There's a lot of good people trying to turn it back, but I hear the same stuff in those places as we're experiencing here.
Yes, because in Britain they had those wonderful British infant schools, which were so developmentally appropriate. And then they took on the American system maybe about 10, 15 years ago. I think they really took it on. And I had colleagues who were just absolutely, you know, weeping with frustration.
Absolutely. And so where do we go? How do we fix it? I mean...
Well, we do what we're doing right now. We're having podcasts, we're presenting, we're writing books, you know, we're going into schools and consulting and finding pockets of light and, developing them. I mean, I think that's the best way we can. You know, I came to America 28 years ago, and it was in 1988, and there was this absolute amazing discussion going on about standardized testing and that children needed to play. And I came from the Israeli Ministry of Education education system, which was based on British infant schools, and I just couldn't imagine what Americans were talking about, testing young children. I just thought, have they gone completely mad? And that was 28 years ago, so we're still talking about it.
I'm glad we've cleared that up and moved on.
Well, we came back.
Yeah.
We went forward and we came back.
Yeah, that pendulum just swings, and it's just, I mean, some of the pre-testing even that they're doing in pre-K programs, it's insane. Along these lines, I've been really concerned the last year or two about how we are preparing people to work in this field. Tamar, I hear like monthly from somebody someplace in the U.S. or Canada or Australia, the message goes something like, hey, Jeff, I'm in my third year of a four-year early learning degree, and none of my professors have mentioned play yet.
Yeah.
And,
oh my gosh!
Well, exactly, and so I would like to think it's an isolated thing, but a dozen or more times a year I hear from these people, and so I think there are still institutions of higher learning that are having a hard time understanding or engaging with what the research has been telling us, and so how do we fix that?
Well, that's the struggle that I had a couple of years ago. And actually, Tamar, I probably brought it up the last time we spoke, is that it wasn't last year, I think it was the year before, that I actually had like some personal insight that I had been spending so much time trying to find the perfect entry point to attempt to fix it that I realized I wasn't doing anything. So it was the following year that Jeff and I said, this year, whatever year that was, we said action through advocacy. Like, stop trying to figure out what is the best entry point, but pick a spot and realize that first thing you do might make a little ripple, or it might be a big one, but let's get the momentum going. And that that led to, what have you done? What have you actually done that is consistent with what you say you believe in? Because it can be very overwhelming to look at all this, especially during podcast week, because all of this stuff is like slam bam right up in the front of our face, and you're hearing the same themes and the same messages and the same frustrations, and you want, okay, so what do I do about this? And one thing leads to another. And we talked about, I mean, we made a comment last night that just simply having arms is enough criteria to be the lead in the infant room, you know? And so when that becomes what happens when you're a baby, you know, so of course you have children who are sitting in a first grade classroom looking like, you know, I'm not even going to bother pushing back, you know, because I learned a long time ago that my needs aren't going to be met. And so it can be very overwhelming like, I don't even know what to do, you know? And
well, you know, I have to supervise student teachers, and I've heard about it from colleagues before, because when I was chair of the department, I didn't have to do that too much because I had other work that I had to do. And now I'm back in the faculty because I'm sort of going to do semi-retirement soon. And I have been given supervising student teaching. And I hate it only because, not that my students are sweethearts, and they're, you know, they're all really, you know, bright and want to learn and love children still and things like that.
Still, they still love children.
Some of them.
Give them a week.
And you know, they're so enthusiastic and inspired, but I have to watch them do these insane tasks, because the cooperating teachers have to do these things. And it's very difficult for me. So I decided my focus and my expertise and what I really, really care about is, you know, teachers' emotions, teachers' prejudices, teachers' feelings, and how it all affects how they do their work. Because I think it's a big piece that's very, very neglected and ignored. And I take that focus. So I say to them, whatever you do with curriculum, that's okay, because what I'd really like you to do is this, this, and this, and you can't do it because you're not allowed to. But if I can't get in there, I'm going to talk to them about how to talk to children, how to relate to children, how that affects you, how do you feel about that. And I have discovered this semester that the students are starting to get it, even though they can't change the curriculum that much. Mm-hmm. And so at least relate to the children in the meantime, you know, until we can fix this other part.
I like that. That reinforcing also, though, of the relationship component. And it's not that then I'm bending over backwards and saying, okay, you know, fine, we're just going to give up and not push back against some of these stupid expectations. But for right now, we're going to kind of put that aside and focus on this.
Relationship.
Yes.
And I have a male student who I've never had before in class, who I'm talking to like that. And because he's relating to the children and asking more open-ended questions, he's beginning to see how bored and miserable they are. And so the last lesson I saw him do had a lot of hands-on stuff that he brought in on his own. I hadn't told him to do it. But because when you stop relating to people, then you see what they need. You know, it makes a difference. And so that's the angle I am just sticking with right now. Which is actually what Bruce Perry always says: relationships, relationships, relationships.
Yeah, and how?
But
oh, go ahead.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm talking over you. I'm sorry about that.
Oh no! What you have to say is much more important than anything Jeff has to say. Go ahead. Absolutely.
No, I don't think so. Well, the thing is that relationships is not simple, because if I've had a struggle with my own relationships and I don't know really who I am or what my identity is or if I'm confident or all those things, that's going to affect how I relate to children. So I have to keep bringing it back to us, which it's not always a popular thought.
Yeah,
people don't always like me to do that.
The shift from the valuing the emotional relationships, the emotional environment we create for children, is astounding. I mean, you look at Head Start, which was started as an opportunity to build for social emotional development, and in the 80s when it was reauthorized, it became so academic, and we've just the early learning programs have followed that shift, and it is a mess and so frustrating. And when you find,
and then you try and attract amazingly passionate people,
yeah,
but say, hey, please come bring your beautiful loving self to this really shitty work environment.
Yeah. And we'll pay you $8 an hour to compromise and sell your soul.
Yeah, the soul doesn't last very long.
It doesn't.
There. Oh, Tiffany, what do you got? Here.
I've been moving into the mic.
This is.
Tiffany, okay.
Oh, are we past the time?
No. We got to talk about Tiffany here. Tiffany, I got a question for you, Tiffany.
Yeah.
Okay, so Tiffany Tamar is she's not even 30 years old yet. From the Portland, Oregon area. She's awesome, and grew up only child. Feels like she's what did you describe yourself as? Kind of an introvert. And where are you with this attention stuff that we've been talking about all for the last 30 minutes?
I have been obsessively taking notes.
I
love this idea that seeking attention is a skill. I feel like that addresses so many concerns that I have about children advocating for themselves and the fact that people shut down that attention. Oh my gosh.
Right.
What I love
when people take notes about what I say is sometimes they take notes and then I learn from what their notes are. So what do you mean it's a skill? I love that thought.
Oh, just that in giving children attention, you're teaching them how to get attention. And it's something that everybody needs to know how to do. That's not a bad skill. It's a very necessary skill.
And the way we go about, the way we learn to get attention might be the problem, though, sometimes. Because if you're not getting it in a loving, nurturing way, and you're finding different ways to act out to get the attention that you crave, you can go down some very problematic paths.
Tell me about it. My whole life has been going down problematic paths.
And I'm not saying some of those choices aren't fun at the time. But
they're not fun.
Well, some I've done some things to get attention that at the time were fun, but as a grown up, maybe wouldn't be the choices I made now. And so I love seeing the people that have come into my house this last week, teaching grandbaby how to get attention with just this human to human contact, and it scares me the way she's going to have to maybe look for attention when she gets a little bit older and is in that system. So I dig that. Tiffany, you're the ones that's been a student most recently. What was getting attention like when you were in school or in college or in your educational career?
Gold Star generation.
Uh-oh.
I know.
Did you get a lot of gold stars?
That was what all of my public school education was. And I'm thankful that I went to a college that didn't believe in that. And I got it out of my system.
I'll have to...
Yeah, that's such an interesting thought. And, of course, Alfie Cohn writes extensively on that, doesn't he? About punishments and rewards. Because, I mean, it's just rewards are just the reverse of punishments. How we get children to do what we want instead of having them. And, you know, it happened to me the other day. I broke a vase. A vase, as you would say. And
vase sounds better.
There was glass all over the floor. And my immediate thought was, oh, God, what will Tom say? My husband, right? And and then I thought to myself, that's ridiculous. And I want to clean up the mess because it's a good thing to get the glass off the floor, not because Tom will be upset about the vase. And, I mean, Tom would never have been upset about the vase. But that was the feeling I had immediately, which I'd learned, you know, as a child growing up, that you know, you mustn't do things that make people angry with you. That's not why we do things.
Yeah, and to have that mindset where you worry that everything you do may potentially piss somebody else off is that's a troubling way to go through life. It just weighs on you and impacts all your choices and all your relationships. That's a hard path to walk.
It brings me back over and over again. I can't help it, but I keep thinking it's back to this issue of how do I get attention. Which way do I have to manipulate things so that somebody will just look at me and appreciate me, you know? Because I think you're right, Lisa, when you said that grandbaby doesn't need as much to seek it out once she's fulfilled. And I think as we get older and older, and if we feel more confident and we feel acknowledged and accepted, we don't have to look for it in such drastic ways anymore.
We get more comfortable in our own skin.
Yes, which is so hard for so many people to feel comfortable in their own skin.
And so for our listeners, go ahead.
Don't we have the ideal world worked out inside us three, four?
Yeah.
The four of us here. We know exactly how to make the ideal
world. If everybody would just listen to us, it would be life would be so much easier. And so Tamar, for our listeners, if they're listening to this episode and thinking, well, you know what, I could and should get better at giving the little people I work with the attention that they need, what tips or advice would you have for them as they go back to their early learning programs or their own children when it comes to giving children the attention that they crave and need? Any starter points?
That's a great question. Yeah. Well, I'm going to start with, of course, you know, at the same time that you want to do it physically in the classroom, you have to accompany that with seeking yourself and finding out who you are and how you feel about it. You don't have to set it aside and do that and then do that. But at the same time, one should be thinking about that in ways. And, you know, there's ways to do that. We can journal at home when we think about things that have come up and so forth. But then secondly, if we can come to terms with it, I really accept and understand that there are a lot of children in the classroom who all need our attention. And so sometimes I can't be holding you when I have to be doing something else. So I'm going to say, if the child is young enough, which is up for me up to about age 4 or 5, put them on your back and carry them with you if you can't, or put them in a stroller and wheel them with you and talk to them. But these are things that people can't accept because, you know, they didn't grow up in Africa with a black African nanny carrying me on my back, on her back, right? Mm-hmm. So I have tips and advice that comes from me. There are ways you can still give attention to children while you're controlling the classroom, whatever that means. I mean, you can give them also enriching and very relevant and interesting experiences to work on in the classroom so that they don't need you as much because they're so engaged in, you know, achieving and accomplishing interesting things to do. They won't even look up and say, you know, do you think it's pretty? Because they're so busy with their important and interesting work. So, I mean, there's a lot of ways you can go about it. You can do it with curriculum. You can do it with understanding yourself. And you can do it with, you know, taking some time to be with them, listen to them.
Yeah,
and get down on their level and talk to them.
And just be. One thing I notice when I'm visiting classrooms is a lot of times caregivers look over or through kids, just moments of human to human eye contact. I think can be a valuable thing that just the recognition that I see you here and we're being people in the space together can be a very powerful connection and do
Absolutely.
A lot to fill up and recharge everybody's emotional well.
That makes me think of how often we talk over the heads of children and not realize that they're standing there. Like, isn't she pretty today?
Yeah.
Why can't we say it to her? I would rather say it to him. Let's change that. How pretty is he? And how strong is she? But that's another semester.
Yeah.
But if we're going to talk even nicely about someone, let's do it to their face, can we? I mean, instead of over to somebody else, hey, has she got pretty pigtails? I mean, God, drives me insane. There's a human being there. Talk to them, you know. I get very upset about that.
I have found that I don't know if providers trust the fact that if you give children what they're needing at that moment, that saturation point eventually kicks in. You know that,
right.
Well, if I wear her, then right. I'm going to have to wear all of them. Well, you
right.
might, but
right.
not all at the same
no.
time. And once children trust that they will be worn when they need it, their
right.
need to test whether or not you're going to give it to them, that goes away. And I'm always impressed by how everything comes back to that relationship component. And so I'm loving that's what you're focusing on with teachers that you're supervising.
Yes. And let me tell you that as a preschool kindergarten teacher in Israel for, you know, 15 years, that's what I did. I had 35 children and one aide, and they were ages 2.5 through 4 and 5. I mean, it was just insane. And I literally wore them. Mm-hmm. But I didn't wear them all, and they hardly ever asked all of them at once to be held. Most of them were busy doing other things. They couldn't be bothered with that, you know. So it's that old Skinnerian thought that if you just do a behavior, everybody's going to be reinforced with that behavior. Mm-hmm. That's not true. It's not true. I don't believe in that at all, because I think a person is a much more than the sum of their behavior.
Yeah, and when we create that environment where they're able to be comfortable with the fact that when they need you, they'll get their turn. Everybody just kind of decompresses a bit, and that becomes the norm for the environment. And like we talk about a lot of times, when you bring shaving cream into the classroom or a new kind of block into the classroom, and it's there for one day a year, everybody needs a lot of it. But when you make that thing the norm, that's available all the time, that's predictable, everybody just needs what they need when they need it. The environment gets a little bit overwhelming, and they need a little bit extra snuggling, and then they go back off into the world, those kind of things. And so when there's an abundance of attention in the space for the people that need it, they don't all need it at the same time.
Ding, 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 ding.
Yes. I mean, I think that one of the main things which I would so love to be able to get across in writing or in presenting is that the first thing that we have to kind of relearn is that seeking attention is a good thing, or at the very least, it is what it is. It's not a bad thing.
No.
And that's very hard. You know, it's like when children are, when anybody is angry, we think it's a bad thing. But anger is what it is, and we need it to protect ourselves, and it helps us in civil rights movements, and it gets what we need if we know how to use it productively and so forth. But attention getting is what it is. We need it to be who we are, and it's not a bad thing. That's a big shift in feeling for people, I think, for adults and children. Adults are terrified that children need attention, and I think it's because they have such an ache in themselves, or I should talk for myself, really, that I have an ache in myself that, you know, I would love to get attention, although when I do get it and somebody calls me delightful, I don't believe it anyway, because I've been been so messed up. So I probably disproved my theory right there.
Well, I think we as adults, I think there's some discomfort for us with it's, we're not good at emotions and with our own, and then having to deal with other, emotions are sloppy and always changing and unpredictable sometimes. And so it's so hard. And so we just decide to push that aside and think we're these just logical, rational beings, but that we're not Spock from Star Trek. We're emotional creatures, and that emotional dance that is so much of life is so difficult for so many of us.
Yes, and that's where, as Tiffany would call it, that skill. You know, we need to be skilled in helping children develop relationships that are, you know, fulfilling and make them feel good, so that they don't have to go out there and sort of keep on going over and over and confirming that relationships are hell, actually, you know, which I think a lot of people suffer from as adults, because they didn't have that as children.
Yeah, and then when you find that good relationship, you're kind of wired to break it, because this couldn't be a real thing, because I'm so used to the crappy relationships, I can't have a good one, and so we self-sabotage, and we do it as adults, but I think kids do that defensively as well.
Absolutely. There's a little boy in a class that one of my students is in, who's been moved from foster home, and, you know, I just watched him come into the school, and it took a few weeks of being very quiet and good, and then he just started to really act out as if to say, okay, you're going to move me anyway, so let's go for it. And I talked to the teacher about it, and the cooperating teacher was open to what I had to say with my student, and they've kind of turned it around a little bit, because she's open to thinking about that in between having to do word building, which is so awful. She says it, the teacher. It is so awful for the children that the only way she can get them to do it is by carrying around a big bucket of or bottle of pretzels. So she gives it to them as a reward if they'll just only build a word or two.
Oh, well, that's nice that they've got pretzels in their Skinner box to.
I mean, this is a true story.
I'm sure it's going on in thousands of classrooms right now. Tamar, Lisa's got a phone call. She's got to be on, and so sadly we got to wrap this up. But it was a ton of fun, and I would talk to you for days on end because you're delightful, and I especially love your laugh. You've got a great laugh, and it makes me smile. I know our listeners are going to enjoy this and reflect on it. And I really appreciate your time and energy and wisdom and your willingness to share it with us today.
Thank you so much for the opportunity. I love talking to you guys. And Lisa, once again, congrats on your book. I love it.
Thank you very much.
And listeners, if you haven't read Don't Get So Upset, you need to, period. So get that today. It'll be good for Tamar to sell a few more books, be good for Red Leaf Press to sell a few more books, and it'll be especially good for you as the reader to get the nougaty goodness out of the content that Tamar has created. This has been another episode of the Child Care Bar and Grill Podcast. Thanks for listening. We'll be back soon with another episode. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
This has been an Explorations Early Learning Upstairs Studio production.
Oh.
Hey, you want to support all the Upstairs Studio podcasts? It's as simple as this. Use our Amazon link when you shop Amazon. We get a small percentage of what you spend. You don't pay any extra. You get your stuff from Amazon. Everybody wins. Where do you find the link? Well, it's on the Explorations Early Learning app. You can find it on the Explorations Early Learning website. And if you don't find it in those places, just get a hold of Jeff on Facebook or via email, and he'll hand deliver it to your inbox. Thanks for your support. Bye-bye.